Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Friday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. Along with Jim Garrity of National Review, I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives today. Jim, and despite last night, I am sticking with my prediction that the Warriors will win the NBA title, though I'm a little less confident than I was last night. I'm sure Hugh Hewitt is in a very good mood today. But I realize, Jim, I can kind of win either way. I certainly don't want Cleveland to get a title. But at the same time, if the Warriors lose, then their best season ever argument's pretty weak, and the Bulls still have a pretty good claim on that. So
you know, it would remind me of the New England Patriots having that perfect season, except for that one loss in the Super Bowl.
Yes.
And so, first of all, Greg, just thank you for giving me that happy memory.
You're welcome.
Take a moment just thinking of that. But secondly, yeah, like – I just saw footage. Hugh Hewitt is building the trophy case. It's all set. It's going to have spectacular lighting. It's going to look terrific. And if he doesn't use it, he'll just use it for the Brown Super Bowl trophy.
They need an AFC trophy before they can get a Super Bowl trophy, and they don't have any of those either. So on to the good martini today. And Jim, you may remember it was earlier this week. I think it was on Tuesday where the president came out. It was the same speech where he mocked his critics for demanding that we actually identify the enemy as radical Islamic terrorists and so forth. He also said that we're doing a great job rolling up ISIS over there in Iraq and Syria, and that the threat is dissipating and we're doing a great job of killing them and cutting off their money and so forth. Well, not really. CIA Director John Brennan testified before the Senate Select Intelligence Committee on Thursday. And he says, while we are making some battlefield progress and making financial progress, it doesn't mean that the threat posed by ISIS has changed at all.
Unfortunately, despite all our progress against ISIL on the battlefield and in the financial realm, our efforts have not reduced the group's terrorism capability and global reach. The resources needed for terrorism are very modest, and the group would have to suffer even heavier losses on territory, manpower, and money for its terrorist capacity to decline significantly. In fact, as the pressure mounts on ISIL, we judge that it will intensify its global terror campaign to maintain its dominance of the global terrorism agenda.
And he says there's a whole lot of people right here in the United States ready to carry that out.
We judge that ISIL is training and attempting to deploy operatives for further attacks. ISIL has a large cadre of Western fighters who could potentially serve as operatives for attacks in the West. And the group is probably exploring a variety of means for infiltrating operatives into the West, including in refugee flows, smuggling routes, and legitimate methods of travel.
Jim, obviously none of that is good news, but at least somebody in a position of some authority in this administration is willing to deal it straight.
Yeah, I'm sure there are a lot of listeners like, wait a minute, this is the good martini? That sounds terrifying. But the point is that for all of an administration which has not always been willing to shine the full spotlight on the nature of the threats that are facing the country, that has sometimes wanted to hide behind happy talk and you know, it's the JV team and we've got them contained. Brennan laid it all out there. And that is, as people can tell, that is not a pretty portrait. It is a very ominous one. There was no point in spinning it. This is a serious menacing threat. There's two points that, you know, they kind of jump out of that. One being is that the point of that they are, you know, far exceeds what Al-Qaeda had at its height. Tens of thousands of individuals. I don't think you can argue the war against ISIS is working if they're bigger than they've ever been and they're bigger than Al-Qaeda was at its height. You can't rectify that. They don't match. And then the second point, when he talks about the exploring a variety of means for infiltrating operatives into the West, including refugee flows. Greg, do you remember that big fight we had back in the fall? And the president was kind of scoffing and sneering and saying Republicans were afraid of widows and orphans and all. Well, gee, here we are, and ISIS is trying to hide within these refugee flows. You know, all of a sudden, this doesn't seem like such crazy talk to say, hey, we have, you know, we got to make sure we can vet every single one of these guys. And at this point, we have a system in which Comey had said, look, for a lot of these people, there's no paperwork. We don't know who they are. They don't have ID. We, you know, it's not like we have an ISIS membership list we can check them against. And then the second thing is there was the much vaunted, much touted, much discussed Department of Homeland Security counterterrorism screening that allowed one of the San Bernardino shooters through. So we have good reason to be concerned about this. Now, maybe, you know, you can argue mostly, you know, we don't have to worry about the 3-year-olds coming through and things like that. But ultimately, this was a legitimate concern that the president has really dismissed. So vindication may be cold comfort, but the CIA really kind of painted a very ugly picture that kind of vindicated a lot of the critics of the Obama administration's approach to ISIS.
Jen, there's also news out today about people affiliated with the State Department, ambassadors and other career diplomats essentially signing on to the demand that there be military action in Syria because the operation's not working there either. And that's a whole other debate that can happen. I'm not advocating U.S. direct military action in Syria. But the idea that more and more people in this administration are publicly disagreeing with the stated policies seems like even more and more liberals who are very much devoted to this president are tired of policies that simply don't work.
Yeah, I believe it was Walter Russell Mead who wrote this morning, there's never been a president who has been more insistent that his viewpoint is correct and reality is wrong.
Happy good martini, everyone.
Happy Friday, everybody. That's the good martini. Hey, what's the bad news, Greg?
The bad martini is part five, I think, of our ongoing series about what could have been done prior to the terrorist attack at the Pulse Club on Sunday. As you say it in the morning jolt today, a parade of red flags going all the way back to him celebrating what happened on 9/11. In 2007, you say he was at a barbecue that had the audacity to serve pork and he threatened to kill everyone there. And the one that came out yesterday, this is on top of, you know, him threatening his coworkers that he's got ties to Al-Qaeda and Hezbollah, and the story of Disney trying to warn the FBI that Mateen and his wife were casing the theme park. Now, as you point out in the jolt, the gun store that he tried to buy hard body armor and bulk ammo from also warned the FBI, and the feds never followed up or even came to the store.
A couple of days ago, yesterday, a listener of this podcast and somebody who reads the Morning Jolt said, Jim, isn't there kind of a contradiction in your takes in that you basically don't think that saying the people on the terror watch list can't buy guns is a good idea? Wouldn't have worked in this case. He wasn't on the terror watch list. He'd been removed. But you're also ripping the FBI. Isn't there kind of a contradiction there? And I was like, I don't really think they're that contradictory. I remember thinking around the more we learned about the Virginia Tech shooter couple years back, we've always been told, both from Columbine and after 9/11, if you see something, say something. But in the case of the Virginia Tech shooter, man, everybody reported this guy. They were constantly going to university officials and saying, he's behaving strange, he's behaving threatening, he was stalking that girl. There were plenty of warnings about this guy. And then you look back to the Aurora, Colorado shooter. His psychiatrist had told the police he thought he was a danger. You can go down the list of a whole bunch of these guys, and they generally do have someone who does report them to authorities. And I remember the lesson of Virginia Tech was also the Tucson shooter. The university officials had tossed him out because of threatening behavior. There's no point in going to a university administrator or a company HR department or something like that. None of these people have the authority to say to somebody, no, you're a danger. We're going to put you on a list where you're not allowed to purchase a gun. And or are we going to put you in jail? So that's the first hard lesson of this. But in this case, what's so maddening and baffling about Omar Mateen are the number of people who called the FBI. They went straight to it. We can go look at the Disney who said they thought he was casing the joint. The several FBI investigations over him telling his coworkers he wanted to be a martyr. I mean, Greg, what do you have to do? It just seemed like one example after another. And the one we've learned about this morning is the gun store. In the case of the gun store, apparently Mateen did not give his name, which made it complicated. But they said that, you know, he asked for armor that they were not allowed to sell. He wanted 1,000 rounds in bulk ammunition and basically just, you know, set off the antenna of the salesman. Basically, there's something weird about this guy. There's something wrong. And that basically they said they didn't sell it. He left without giving his name. They called the FBI because they felt like they dealt with somebody who was up to no good. And the FBI apparently did no response to that. Now, we're granted, I don't know whether the FBI is getting a million of these kind of calls a day, but you'd think that if a gun store says, hey, a guy just came in here trying to buy 1,000 rounds and body armor, and we got the feeling he was up to no good, you'd like to think they'd follow up on that, wouldn't you, Greg?
That is their job.
Right. I mean, like, so that, you know, that, and people say, oh, he didn't give his name. Okay, but how many 30-something Arab males in Orlando could there be? You could at least give a physical description. And obviously we know Omar Mateen had been on the FBI's radar screen before. If there are like dozens and dozens of 30-something Arab males in the Orlando area being, you know, tracked by the FBI and on their list as potential threats, then we have to have another conversation, Greg. This seems like a very big deal. If this is exceptionally common, then we live in a much more dangerous world than we thought we did. But if it's not so common, then you got kind of a little frustrating, with, you know, to see the FBI get warned about this guy over and over again. And I don't know about you, Greg. I just can't help but feel that a good portion of this obsessive discussion about gun control is an effort to distract us and not have us pay too much attention from the fact that the FBI dropped the ball in this case. And my, you know, the sneaking suspicion that it did so out of, if not as, you know, accusation, fears of accusations of Islamophobia, whatever the reasoning was, the FBI looks very bad here. And it's kind of, you know, it's an understandable motive that some folks would want to look everywhere except at what the FBI had done.
It's unbelievable, and I'm sure you've heard some ex-FBI officials speaking this week as well. I've interviewed one and heard an interview with another, and basically what we're hearing is that there's this willful blindness in this administration, and policy has changed in large respects from the Bush administration, where they're not supposed to be staking out mosques. They're not supposed to be pursuing the leads that were once obvious to pursue because of political correctness. That's only the opinion of a few people, obviously. But if that is, in fact, the case, then this willful blindness from this administration goes much deeper than we thought, and it's much more disturbing and much more dangerous.
It's not every single former FBI agent is making this argument, but it's certainly it's coming up from more than one guy, suggesting this is not one or two disgruntled former employees. It does appear there's been a culture change. And look, you know, the consequences of this are fatal. There's, you know, that old saying, it's better to be judged by 12 than carried by 6. And also, it's easier to ask for forgiveness than ask for permission. You know, in light of this, maybe we in the public will be okay with a slightly more assertive FBI. I read this morning that he was in this member of this very small mosque community, with only 170 members. Two of them have become suicide bombers or terrorists. That seems like a lot, and two completely separate terror attacks. That, you know, I'm fine with monitoring that mosque right now. Maybe it's just purely coincidence and the only two bad apples in this bunch. But we're kind of just left looking at this in this nagging sense that our government agencies are not doing everything they could to protect us, and people are dying as a result of it.
As you mentioned, and as we transition to the crazy martini, much of the left has been focused on gun control this week. There was that filibuster in the Senate, which we mentioned yesterday, and just largely a push on the left that all this would go away if we could just get guns out of the hands of the wrong people and get certain guns off the market altogether. Over at Vox, which is the first place conservatives always go after a major event like this for rational, coherent thoughts, Dylan Matthews writes for them over there, and he tweeted yesterday, "This is not the Dems' sales pitch, but I'm totally down with letting the Prez unilaterally ban people, in parentheses, hopefully everyone, from buying guns." Then even Glenn Greenwald, you know, the guy who carried the water for Edward Snowden, says, it's a terrible idea to allow restriction of rights without court's evidence and due process. It will be abused. And the criticism of Mr. Matthews' suggestion went downhill from there. So, Jim, once again with the left, if the Constitution's in your way,
Wasn't the headline for the slogan for Vox for a while like the smartest thinkers, the most probing questions or something like it was some other nonsense of look at us, we're so smart. I think it's pretty obvious that they've not lived up to that effusive hype. I think it was Matt Iglesias who said what we're doing here is nothing less than transforming the communication of information in the 20th. And here's like, wait, you know, I just think the president should be allowed to bar people's rights anytime he wants, whenever he wants, in any set of circumstances. This is kind of like unhinged guy on the street corner talk. But, you know, it's a major website and, you know, lots of mainstream media has reported it and cite it. I myself only find myself turning to it when somebody says, oh, my God, can you believe they're saying this? They've gone full salon.
Yeah, there's not a whole lot of ways to break this down. This is just insanity.
Judging your online lefty magazines, Slate was always the let's come up with the exact opposite of common sense and try to like daringly write an op-ed in favor of it. Right. Probably the most classic of the genre was why drinking your own urine is good for you. I'm not making that up. That was a genuine headline of a piece. And so Slate pitches turned into this, you know, Donald Trump needs to loosen up, you know. Marco Rubio is proving to be a resolute, steadfast guy who always sticks to a position and won't flip-flop. You pick the exact opposite and try to make the argument. And sometimes there was almost a an element of amusement. You almost admired their daring for trying to make these arguments. Salon, on the other hand, which is flat out stupid. Everybody we disagree with is the ultimate response for everything. When the discussion happened earlier this week about Omar Mateen's wife and her, you know, the increasing evidence that she knew what was going on, may have tried to talk him out of it, but certainly never called the cops or did anything to prevent this massacre. The Salon headline was, "Oh, good. Finally, we have a woman to blame." Again, not making this up. So there's all that. And then Vox is like the perfect pseudo-intellectual version of this. Like, of we're going to take an absolutely unhinged idea, and we're going to act like it's not only perfectly normal, but really smart and insightful to argue this. So this is kind of the taxonomy of crazy lefty websites to close out our weekend.
Oh, crazy. Crazy indeed. Jim, have a wonderful Father's Day on Sunday. I'm sure, just like me, that you will be closely heeding Michelle Obama's words to be better, because we don't try that hard so far.
Yeah, thanks, Mrs. Obama. Have a good Father's Day as well to you, Greg, and to our fathers and all the other fathers out there.
Absolutely. Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. Have a great weekend and join us next week for the next Three Martini Lunch.